Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. I am currently up in the mountains at my home. It's really my second home. I try to get away occasionally and get some rest, and I've been doing a lot of sleeping lately. I didn't realize I needed so much sleep, but life happens. I'm married to an amazing woman. We have lots of children, and every now and then we just get away to the mountains to kind of recharge. And when I recharge, I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of writing. And I do a lot of thinking from a 100,000-foot view all the way down to a granular level. And what I see today in the United States of America, I believe, has happened before. What am I talking about? I'm talking about, I believe, our nation is asleep at the wheel. Back in 1941, Isakuro Yamamoto, who was the naval marshal general of Japan's fleet, made a statement after the attack on Pearl Harbor. He said, "I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve." Winston Churchill went on to explain his feelings after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And he began with, "No American will think it wrong of me if I proclaim that to have the United States at our side was to me the greatest joy. I could not foretell the course of events. I do not pretend to have measured the martial might of Japan. But now, at this very moment, I knew the United States was in the war up to the neck and in to the death." So we had won after all, he continued. "England would live, Britain would live, the Commonwealth of Nations and Empire would live. How long the war would last or in what fashion it would end, no man could tell. Nor did I, at this moment, care. Once again, in our long island history, we should emerge, however mauled or mutilated, safe and victorious. We should not be wiped out. Our history would not come to an end. We might not even have to die as individuals." And finally, Churchill concluded, "Hitler's fate was sealed. Mussolini's fate was sealed. As for the Japanese, they would be ground to powder. All the rest was merely the proper application of overwhelming force. United, we could subdue everybody else in the world. Many disasters, immeasurable costs, and tribulation lay ahead, but there was no more doubt about the end." Winston Churchill knew what Admiral Yamamoto knew, that a sleeping giant was awakened. Now, there were some people in Europe who didn't believe the Americans would be strong enough to defeat the Nazi war machine. In fact, there were a lot of pessimistic folks that said the Americans were soft. They could never be united. They would be divided. They would never stand bloodletting, and their democracy and system of recurrent elections would paralyze their war effort. But Churchill had a response for them. He described these people as numerous but remote, wealthy, and talkative. I guess these might have been the early globalists. He knew these people would soon be proven wrong because he had studied the American Civil War, a conflict which was fought out to the last desperate inch. And pointing out a comment made to him, Winston Churchill, decades before World War II, Churchill notes Sir Edward Grey having once prophetically stated, The United States is like a gigantic boiler. Once the fire is lighted under it, there is no limit to the power it can generate. I believe the fire is being lit under the boiler again. I believe it's happening due to a runaway progressive ideology that has guided our nation towards the cliff. I don't believe we're going to get there, however, because I believe more Americans are going to wake up, and I'm seeing good evidence of that. I've always said you don't decide who you are, you discover who you are. And as true Americans today in 2021, we need to wake up and discover who we are as Americans. Not who we are as Americans like Barack Obama would say, or Joe Biden, or Kamala Harris, or any of the litany of progressive Democrat so-called leaders who want to tell us who we are. No, we will discover who we are by looking inside of ourselves, by awakening that sleeping giant and becoming focused. We have to protect our nation. Now, I'm not calling for violence, just the opposite. I'm calling, like Martin Luther King did, for a renaissance and a reformation of morality, of morals, of manners, where Americans will wake up and identify that what is happening right now is immoral. And they will light that boiler, heat that fire, and course correct. Just the other day, a 13-year-old healthy Michigan boy with no pre-existing conditions died after getting a second dose of the Chinese virus vaccine. Now, it asked Facebook, should his death be blamed on pro-vaccine misinformation coming from the White House? I think that's a fair question. But as we're seeing more and more reported deaths from the vaccine, just the other day, a most interesting thing happened in the CDC about post-vaccine COVID breakthrough. And as many of us have been saying all along, testing for positive COVID-19 in the hospital does not mean that you actually have active disease or died from it. Especially if you do your research, and we'll try to post these in the show notes, the perverse financial incentives, that is, increased reimbursement from Medicare for a COVID-19 diagnosis, and full reimbursement for most major insurances. If the diagnosis on a deceased patient's chart is COVID-19, if you look at all the data, what you're seeing now is the folks that are saying the vaccine is safe and that we need to look at the data more carefully. What they're saying is we need to look at the death rate from the vaccine and decide whether it was with COVID or from COVID. But they're just saying that amongst the vaccinated patients, when most of us who are sentient human beings who have the ability to read and have been looking at the medical literature and scientific literature have been calling for this since day one. We said get away from a vanity metric of a positive test and look at the actual disease. Because a report in PJ Media came out and said when you look at the CDC's report as of the end of April, it is explicit. Because 10,262 SARS-CoV-2 vaccine breakthrough infections have been reported from 46 states. And they went down and they broke down the information in this article. And they found a rough estimate in California and Minnesota of 40%. 40% of the deaths that they were reporting were not from COVID, but with COVID. And today the CDC reports that there were 588,421 COVID-19 deaths in the United States. So, if you read this article and then you take 40% of those hospitalized or died with COVID-19, as some having post-vaccination, the number would be more like, 353,000 plus. And if a New Jersey study found 89% of these people were near the end of life anyway due to illness and frailty, that would mean under 40,000 deaths. Listen to this. from COVID-19 that could be considered unexpected or warrant further investigation. So my question to you is, why is the CDC so scrupulous in tracking post-vaccine deaths from COVID-19? I mean, they're going to great pains to delineate those who are hospitalized with COVID-19 or die with it. And I think this is obvious. They want to push the vaccine, so they're really looking hard at post-vaccination deaths. However, when we were talking about getting the vaccine, all they needed to do was rack up the number of deaths. Are you seeing what's going on? We have an undercounting of vaccine deaths and an overcounting of COVID deaths. And it's being brought to you commercial free from our Centers of Disease Control. And as people are starting to come out and see this, as whistleblowers are starting to emerge from the CDC stating that there are more deaths from the vaccine than are being currently reported, right on cue, you have a paper published, and it was even picked up in the Epoch Times, which I'm a little disappointed. I think they should have looked at the actual paper, but I know they're just reporting the news. From the United Kingdom, the government in the United Kingdom, the former home of Winston Churchill, saying vaccines highly effective against the B.1.617.2, which is the Delta variant, after two doses. So if you read the first part of this article, it says that the vaccine's highly effective against the Delta variant. So I actually got the paper off of Medex and read it. And their definition of highly effective is very different from, I don't know, an actual doctor's definition of highly effective. Because they said the vaccine curbs symptoms, which is very subjective, and it doesn't prevent acquisition of the virus or spread. An important note is the ethical oversight was waived due to the emergency use authorization, and this article is still in preprint and has not been peer-reviewed. But they had to get it out there right on cue. They had to get it out there because a whistleblower recently came to the microphone and said there were a lot of deaths, thousands of deaths, within 3 days of taking the vaccine, as that has sent shockwaves across this nation and across the pond to Europe and Asia. Because the CDC wants us not to believe our lying eyes. Or they want us to believe our lying eyes. They don't want us to understand that they were overcounting deaths to push to make the vaccine, and then they're undercounting deaths to continue to promote the vaccine. Now, that's not hyperbole. That's not my opinion. That's what the facts are showing. So I want to break it down for you. I would note, though, that there are some accurate numbers coming out besides the vaccine deaths, and that's drug overdose deaths in the U.S. surged nearly 30%. This is an article from the Wall Street Journal, and it's fairly well written. And they surged 30% because of lockdowns. And there's several reasons for that. And I encourage you to take a look at this article. So while we have an increase in paradoxical death rate from the way we have handled the coronavirus, we don't have an actual increase in deaths from the coronavirus, as we're finding. But we are finding that we're stacking up quite a few deaths from a gene therapy vaccine, or at least vaccine in name only. I believe it goes back to the first spike protein vaccine that was issued to Pfizer in 1990. That's right, you heard me correct. The S1 spike protein vaccine was issued to Pfizer in 1990. And in 1999, Anthony Fauci wanted to use a coronavirus variant as a vaccine for HIV. There's a lot more to say about that, but I just want to set you up for understanding where we are today. Because the patents for coronavirus date back to around 2002. And in 2002, Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, along with two other co-inventors, wonder who they are, you can look it up, worked on developing an infectious, now listen to this, transmission defective coronavirus. Ralph Baric was actually taking a coronavirus and trying to make it more infective, but just, you know, transmission defective. And in 2002, Ralph Baric team patented a number of coronaviruses that make them more infectious, listen to this, to humans. And this is where biological and chemical weapons become important. If you make a natural disease more toxic to humans, it is a weapon. Now, I have a feeling if Ralph Baric took a gun and made it more lethal, like, I don't know, cut off the stock, made it automatic, increased its ability to cycle faster and put out more bullets, I have a feeling the radical left would be going after him saying, you can't do that. But no, he can take a virus, an infectious replicating human virus that is more toxic to lung tissue, and create what I believe they understood they had in 2002. They had a Frankenstein. Now, what do I have to support that? Well, I have that in 2003, we had our first pandemic from SARS-CoV-1. Look at the sequence. Wake up. Because while you were sleeping in 2002, Ralph Baric and his team patented a number of coronaviruses they made more infectious. And then just by unusual coincidence, in 2003, we had our first SARS-CoV-1. And the problem began. It's a problem because since that first SARS-CoV-1, we understood how to treat it, what to do, and we ignored that. And when we roll around to SARS-CoV-2, we didn't count death rate correctly. We incentivized the increased reporting of deaths that weren't due to coronavirus. We did not delineate whether a person died with or from coronavirus. We just kept stacking up the numbers. And when the numbers stacked up and the medical bureaucracy, along with their media sycophants, tried to trash medication that has been shown not only to treat coronavirus, but prevent it, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Not my words, but actually Dr. Fauci's back in 2004. When the medical community tried to say something, they shot it down in an article in The Lancet that had to be retracted 2 weeks after it was published. But the damage was done. Because they, the establishment, they needed a vaccine. They needed an emergency use authorization for a vaccine. They even had to change the definition of a vaccine because they wanted to do something, this gene therapy that a lot of people had been working on for a long time, including Dr. Anthony Fauci. And while you were sleeping, there was a lot of money being invested in it. Now, there is a legal and an FDA standard for a vaccine, and the current vaccines don't meet either of those standards because you're injecting a stimulant into your body to create a pathogen that you hope is correct and that your body will have the correct response from. Let me break this down simply. You're injecting something into your body and hope there will be an immune response. Now, this isn't the actual pathogen that we have seen since the revolution that have been used for a vaccine. You will remember back around the American Revolution, they would scrape the scabs of the smallpox pustules with the needle and put a little bit of that pathogen into others to, quote, vaccinate them so they have an immune response, so it prevents them from getting the main disease. Now, that's not what these folks did. They just wanted to put the instructions for your cells to create a pathogen in your body and hope that it was correct and your body would have the correct response. They just put the information to create the pathogen in your body. They didn't put the actual pathogen. And there were no long-term studies to measure the effect of this. And the clinical trials to date did not measure immune response, infection response, or transmission response. Every vital clinical trait of a vaccine was not measured. And I believe there's a reason for this, because humans aren't supposed to have spike proteins. And I believe we could be creating a second level pathogen. And the risk of secondary transmission of clinical symptoms has been known since the early 2000s in this type of therapy. But it wasn't included for monitoring. Even based on past issues they have had with this type of therapy and in current trials, it was not monitored. It was a known risk. It was identified to be monitored, but it wasn't. You just have to look back to Peter Daszak, who's the chucklehead that just magically appears in the center of everything. In 2015, in an article in Nature, engineered bat viruses stir debate over risky research. And in this Nature article, some scientists and doctors who I believe have a moral compass and ethics were very concerned with Peter Daszak's, quote, gain-of-function research. And they were more concerned that it was continuing after the October 2014 moratorium that was placed on federal funding for such research. Because if you read through the article, and it will be in our show notes, Daszak and a gentleman by the name of Ralph Baric, who not only appears in Dr. Fauci's emails, but also in this timeline that we're talking about, say the research had benefits. They say creating the perfect Frankenstein had benefits. But the study findings move this virus from a candidate to an emerging pathogen to a clear and present danger, according to Peter Daszak. And he tried to pawn it off on animals, yet they were using the virus in human cells and animal models because they wanted to get something they could patent, I believe. They wanted to get to a vaccine. They needed a virus that they could create a vaccine for. And while you were sleeping, these experiments took place. The ironic thing is Ralph Baric said that without the virus, he says without the experiments, the virus would still be seen as not a threat. So, of course, he had to create a threat so you could see it as a threat. That's like someone saying not having any nuclear weapons, but they say, I have to build a nuclear weapon so you can see that nuclear weapons are a threat. And his latest work, according to this article in 2015, showed that the virus had already overcome critical barriers such as being able to latch onto human receptors and efficiently infect human airway cells. Remember the spike protein. And the scientist that wrote this paper said, I don't think you can ignore that. But while you were sleeping, a lot of people did. A lot of people ignored that. But a few of us didn't. A few of us actually looked up the U.S. Code on prohibitions with respect to biological weapons, 18 U.S. Code 175. And the spike protein in the ejection, as I alluded to before, is a bioweapon defined under U.S. law. I want you to listen to this, and I want you to think about what's happened in the creation of this virus and the gain-of-function testing. That is documented. Remember, the patents were applied for this virus. And the law states, whoever knowingly develops, produces, stockpiles, transfers, acquires, retains, or possesses any biological agent toxin or delivery system for use as a weapon, or knowingly assists a foreign state or any organization to do so, or attempts, threatens, or conspires to do the same, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for life or any term of years, or both. And there is extraterritorial federal jurisdiction over an offense under this section committed by or against a national of the United States. This isn't under the Patriot Act. This is our U.S. law, but we need patriots to act. Can you imagine if the attack on Pearl Harbor was hidden by the media? Can you imagine if they isolated the information coming from the islands of Hawaii during that time and told us that it was misinformation? It's a pretty stark example, but it's not far off the mark. Because the test for this virus was created before the, quote, virus hit the scene. We were told it was a novel virus in 2020, but in October of 2019, I believe there were folks colluding while you were sleeping. A small group of people understood, and maybe it was a larger group of people, that they had patents on this virus, and this virus could be a public health threat. So 3 months before we were even told the virus, we were even told we had a case of the virus in October of 2019, a pre-pandemic exercise was performed at Johns Hopkins Hospital and funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And in this event, Event 201, Matthew Harrington, a K Street publicist with Manhattan offices, said what we are seeing now, but we didn't pick up while we were sleeping. He talked about the social media platforms and how they would have to be involved to, you know, combat misinformation before we even knew the virus existed or there was information about it. Cut one.
We're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over. They, in fact, have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with the scientific and health communities to counterweight, if not flood the zone, of accurate information. Because to put the genie back in the bottle of the misinformation and disinformation is nigh impossible.
Yeah, that was Matthew Harrington. He's a publicist. You know, people hire a publicist to clean up their reputations, to manage the information. And in Event 201, with fake broadcasts about a coronavirus pandemic, they just happened to guess that that probably would happen. They tried to address all the problems they would have in putting this out to the American public. And in November of 2019, just a month later, Anthony Fauci was getting the spike protein patent transferred from UC Chapel Hill to a company called Moderna. And Ralph Baric, in a response to a major media outlet, corroborated this and said he was sending samples, and this is open source, in November to Moderna, and that is November 2019, before we even knew a coronavirus was out there, before the first coronavirus patient, as we are told, was identified. So you have a computer-generated messenger RNA right now that was given to Moderna to produce a spike protein back in 2019. And the synthetic computer-generated code uploaded by the Chinese in January was put into an injection and called a vaccine to inject a pathogen stimulant, not a pathogen, not a messenger RNA strand of COVID-19. No, just the instructions to create one. And the cells produce the S1 spike protein synthesis, not the actual virus. And as we're seeing, this S1 spike protein is being produced in your cells, in your blood, in your vessels, your blood vessels. And they're causing a lot of problems and death. And a computer code uploaded by the Chinese into the U.S. vaccine manufacturers to inject a bioweapon pathogen into the American populace, I would say is probably not a good thing. But Peter Daszak, the veterinary, was quoted. The veterinarian was quoted from Fauci's emails in February 6th and 7th. Peter Daszak quoted, they need a cover story that distances him from the Chinese and this virus. Are you seeing the sequence of events? Now, these are all open source and easily verified. And Daszak stated that he reiterated, until an infection, and I want you to listen to Daszak's statement, until an infectious disease crisis is very real, and I believe this was back in 2015, present and at an emergent, so this is Peter Daszak talking, quote, until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at an emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, Daszak said, we need to increase public understanding of the need for major countermeasures such as pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus coronavirus vaccine. And here's the money shot. So wake up. A key driver, and that's me talking, now here's Daszak again, a key driver is the media. And the economics follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. That's Peter Daszak. He said you just had to see profit at the end of the process. Now, this is the same Peter Daszak that said there was no lab leak, that this clearly came from bats. But of course, Peter Daszak, in his invincible ignorance, probably forgot the interview he gave in December of 2019 when he was bragging about the ability to create a SARS coronavirus in human cells where it could only be done in the lab. Cut two.
Well, we're trying to look at patterns of wildlife trade that include a risk of new diseases emerging. So we're doing a couple of things, really. So one is around SARS. We focused on SARS coronavirus emerged from a wildlife market and was the first pandemic of this century. So it's a big event. So we started to trace
back. Stop right
back.
There for a second. The first pandemic of this century came after they created, Ralph Baric did, in the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, when they created a virulent coronavirus that could be transmitted to humans. And then, just ironically enough, we had our first pandemic. Now, we have no concrete proof it came from animals. In fact, just the opposite. But that's not going to keep this idiot, this man who has committed crimes against humanity, from saying and trying to set up everything. But this little chucklehead can't help himself, and he's going to out himself, so continue.
The wildlife market, which species carried the virus that came into those markets? We found that it was bats, not civets, was the original idea.
Right.
So then we started looking, where did they come from? And we went out to southern China and did surveillance of bats across southern China. And we've now found, after 6 or 7 years of doing this, over 100 new SARS-related coronaviruses, very close to SARS. Some of them get into human cells in the lab.
Stop right there. Some of them get into human cells. Now, it doesn't transmit in the wild to humans. He said they get in, in the lab. Listen to it again.
Some of them get into human cells in the lab.
Yeah, because it was created in the lab. It was gain-of-function testing. And in March of 2020, there were 4 patents that were amended on the coronavirus. And Anthony Fauci said, and I think it was Moderna that amended those patents, and then Anthony Fauci said Moderna would be a front runner in the vaccine. And he said this in the spring of 2020 after Moderna amends their patents. Now, understand, at the time while you were sleeping, Moderna had never produced a successful vaccine. Moderna had never produced a vaccine that was safe for humans. Yet Anthony Fauci, with no reason and no concrete scientific information, said they were the front runner. So who invests in Moderna? Who invests in Moderna, Pfizer, the NIH, the CDC? Because the NIH and the CDC are really just a front for the major pharmaceutical companies. They're a front that gets grants that do the initial screening and testing for the pharmaceutical companies. But don't take my word for it. Look at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that funds Moderna. And he also funds a significant amount of research by the NIH and the NIAID, where Dr. Fauci keeps his office. And in the last just couple years, ironically enough, the Bill Gates Foundation funded over $34 million to the NIH and $14 million to the NIAID. You see, the National Institute of Health also owns a stake in Moderna and its intellectual property, as mentioned by Francis Collins at the Economic Club panel discussion in May 29 of 2020. He actually stated, we do have some particular stake in the intellectual properties. And one, the one that's furthest along, he's talking about vaccines that actually started at the federal government in our own vaccine research center at the NIH. So you just have to follow the money. And you can see that the NIH and the CEPI, another Bill Gates venture, funded the testing at Kaiser Permanente Research Institute. You know, a place that was outfitted by Microsoft before Gates stepped down. And it's probably worth noting that the testing took place at Washington University, which is funded heavily by the Gates Foundation and is also the NIH testing network. And Washington University, ironically, is the home of the IHME, hang with me, the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. You know, the guys that said at the outset we would have millions and millions of deaths and drove the panic-demic initially and caused all this fear. But Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is very thorough, I believe, because lastly, before final approval, the vaccine needed to be greenlit by the Food and Drug Administration. And would you believe it? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have extensive partnerships with them as well. And on July 5th, 2017, the Gates Foundation and the FDA signed a memorandum of understanding together in their shared interest in the, quote, scientific progress related to regulatory science and regulatory capacity building to advance global public health. And all this happened while you were sleeping. And it produced a lot of fear, and it continues to this day. But don't take my word for it. Listen to this Australian newscaster talking about the current conditions in Australia. Cut four.
Within hours, Sydney will be in the grip of much tougher restrictions, the Premier clamping down on the stubborn Delta outbreak with what she's calling a no-regrets policy. And this is why. From a record 82,000 tests, the state today recorded 111 cases and, tragically, the third COVID death in this outbreak, a man aged in his 80s from the city's southeast. Across Greater Sydney, retail shops will now close. A small list of essential stores can remain open. Construction sites across the city shut down. And from midnight tonight, 110 suburbs across Liverpool, Fairfield and Canterbury Bankstown will be sealed shut. That's 900,000 residents who can't leave their area, even for work.
900,000 residents that can't leave even for work in Australia. Australian has become a completely tyrannical state and country. They've had three deaths, and the third was someone in their 80s. Australia is asleep, but America isn't. America's not asleep, and we understand what's going on. Now, while we are hearing you must get the vaccine, we also understand that only 335 people under the age of 18 have passed away from COVID-19, according to the CDC. But in a Johns Hopkins study, they pulled the medical records, which should be done for every patient. And it showed that every single one of those patients under 18 and the, quote, children had serious underlying medical conditions like leukemia. They were immunocompromised. So why are we telling children they have to wear masks and they have to inject a known toxin or a deadly agent into their body when they have a 0% chance of dying from coronavirus if they don't have any significant, serious underlying medical conditions? Why is that? Why does Pfizer have a, quote, acceptable death rate on a virus that has, across all age groups, a 99.5% survivability? I think these are questions that need to be asked, because while you were sleeping, everything was put into place. But I believe the American people are waking up. Rand Paul the other day had Anthony Fauci in front of him, and I highly recommend that you go and Google that video, or don't Google it. Go to a different search engine, get that video, and watch Anthony Fauci squirm because he lied to Congress about the gain-of-function testing. Fauci denied the gain-of-function research And Rand Paul had a letter from the NIH, NIAID, saying there was a moratorium on gain-of-function research. Then Rand Paul, instead of sending a criminal referral, however, when this first came out, he fundraised off the video of the hearing. He didn't deliver the knockout blow like he should have. But thank God, he has now changed his tune, that is Rand Paul, probably due to the great work by Dr. David Martin, who has been on podcasts exposing this ugly truth. And Rand Paul is sending a criminal referral. I guess it's better late than never, but not by much. Because we haven't had politicians that are awake. We haven't had politicians that will deliver the knockout blow. They just fundraise off of sound bites. But the American people are awake. The American people are awake and understand the Department of Justice has had all of this information since April of 2020 on this gain-of-function testing. Yet the DOJ currently has failed because every United States attorney going after are all going after an antitrust. They're going after Google, Facebook. They're going after these big tech search engines and optimization. They're just created one big fig leaf instead of going after the folks that have shut down the economy, caused the deaths of thousands. And I guess they may be doing that because the Department of Justice has what they call prosecutorial discretion. It's in their discretion. Now, I'm not saying that they don't have this discretion, but I think that they're probably, based on my understanding and what I have seen, politically motivated. It could be, if you look at CNBC.com, we'll have this in our show notes, top Biden advisor could face ethics pressure as his brother lobbies for pharma firms. And if you look at a lot of Joe Biden's advisors, and we're going to do a podcast on this in the future, you'll see that they all have conflicts of interest. They all are ideologically crafted from the same think tanks. So there may be a reason for that. But there is a big crime out there, I believe. There is collusion between interlocking directorates. Anthony Fauci, the NIAID, the director for the CDC in China, Dr. Elias from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all sitting on a board to create price fix and market direct this pandemic. So where are the whistleblowers? Well, one's come forward. A federal lawsuit just filed seeks the immediately halt of COVID vaccines due to the CDC that is undercounting, according to the affidavit. And that's signed under penalty of perjury. The CDC is undercounting vaccine deaths. The same CDC that's overcounting coronavirus deaths, but undercounting vaccine deaths. Are you awake yet? And you can even look in Scotland where the Daily Mail is exposed that 5,500 people have died within 28 days of having COVID-19 vaccine in Scotland. And that's according to the government there. 5,522 people having the COVID-19 vaccine in Scotland have died according to Public Health Scotland. So this isn't a one-off. And while you were sleeping, there was a vaccine being promoted and pushed out. And we're seeing the real-world consequences. We're seeing that thousands of cases of death within 3 days of the vaccine, according to this whistleblower, are being exposed. But will the Department of Justice and the FBI continue their streak of ignoring actual evidence and providing cover for a political party? You don't have to look back too far to a real tragedy in our nation, September 11, 2001, because it was one of the most horrific episodes in American history. At that time, an FBI field agent, Colleen Rowley, had already reported her suspicions about Zacharias Moussaoui, one of the suicide bombers or attackers, and had requested permission to search his home, yet their request was denied. And it led to the tragedy that I think could have been avoided. Now, she did submit her evidence as a whistleblower to the 9/11 Commission, but what has actually come out of it? I mean, the FBI and the DOJ are too busy protecting us against, quote, domestic terrorists. They're too busy kicking down the doors of people they think, at least one couple in Alaska, they thought were at the Capitol, on January 6th who actually weren't, yet they were willing to kick the door of their house down, but not Zachariah Moussaoui, one of the suicide attackers that one of their own field agents had reported a suspicion about and requested permission to search his home. Let that sink in. They're kicking down doors of everyday Americans, and they're missing the big attacks. You think I'm too far over my skis? Look at the Time article in 2016 when 49 people at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando were killed. And FBI Chief Jim Comey said on that the Bureau had investigated and interrogated Omar Mateen on three occasions over the last 3 years on suspicion he might have been a radicalized Islamic terrorist. But they never saw the danger coming, and they didn't prevent it. 49 people are dead. I would say 49 people from the LGBT community. Yeah, I don't hear anyone raising any heck about that. Because there is a reality and an alternate reality. And the reality is that organizations that receive over $48 billion and have over 270,000 employees combined failed to stop another horrific accident, a school shooting that telegraphed the tragedy in every possible way except for, you know, three billboards. Because in 2017, an initial report was called to the FBI when Nicholas Cruz posted that he wanted to be a professional school shooter. And at that time, there were only three people on social media that spelled their name the same way Nicholas Cruz spelled his. Three people in the entire nation. And the FBI was contacted again in January with a detailed report on Nicholas Cruz. And the bland response is that procedures were not followed. And 17 people are dead because of it. 17 children. This is the problem we have. Yet they're somehow kicking in the doors of American citizens that were let into the Capitol. Now, I'm not dismissing what was done on January 6th. I think it was wrong. But the reaction to it, it appears, is greatly overstated. Yet I just gave you three examples of understated accidents, not accidents, but understated terrorist acts that the FBI just couldn't figure out, despite a lot of information. So it shows you where they're focused. And they have to be focused like that because they're all part of the narrative. The narrative that Kathleen Sebelius is pushing, the former Secretary of Health and Human Services under Barack Obama. She's stating now unvaccinated Americans should not be allowed to work or have access to children. Are you awake yet? Are you awake? And did you hear the other day when Sir Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor to the United Kingdom, you know, that just published the study that hasn't been peer-reviewed yet, saying that you need two doses of the vaccine. This chief scientific advisor to the UK since 2018 said this the other day, Cut 5.
In terms of the number of people in hospital who've been double vaccinated, we know it's around 60% of the people being admitted to hospital with COVID have been double vaccinated. And that's not surprising because the vaccines are not 100% effective.
Oh, he's catching some grief for that one. He said 60% presented to the hospital who were double vaccinated. Yet the UK government just put out a study that I read to you at the beginning that is, quote, pre-published, that stated vaccines highly effective against the Delta variant after two doses. So you have the head of their scientific community for the UK saying that 60% are going to the hospital after the second dose. Are you awake yet? Is the sleeping giant awake? Now, he has come back immediately and said he meant 40%, but even 40% is too high. Yet you have an unscrupulous media, an unscrupulous politicians pushing a narrative that are telling you have to get the vaccine. Listen to the asterisk President Biden the other day when he was able to form a simple, coherent sentence. What did he have? What was he told to say? What did Ron Klain write for him? Cut 6.
Look, the only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated. And they're killing people.
That's right. They're killing people. That's the new three-word tagline. The unvaccinated are killing people because you have a political party that is unmoored from morality and the Constitution. and they are beholden to major fundraisers and donors in the vaccine community. But it wasn't just President Biden. His CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, she got into the act too, cut seven.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We are seeing outbreaks of cases in parts of the country that have low vaccination coverage because unvaccinated people are at risk, and communities that are fully vaccinated are generally faring well. The good news is that if you're fully vaccinated, you are protected against severe COVID, hospitalization, and death, and are even protected against the known variants, including the Delta variant, circulating in this country.
Wow, that was great. You're protected. Of course, across the pond in Great Britain, her counterpart just said that if you've had the vaccine, 40% now, he said 60 at first, but at least 40%, almost half, are having to go to the hospital. So Rochelle Walensky just lied to the American people. But it wouldn't be complete if we didn't play this cut from CNN where Carl Cameron, and I don't know if the guy's sick, he's not looking too well, has to tout the talking points as well, cut eight.
Just last week, new infections went up 70%. And according to the CDC, the NIH, which oversees the CDC, it is absolutely 99.5% of those infections are people who haven't gotten vaccinated. I mean, come on.
Wow, 99.5% of the infections are people that haven't got vaccinated. And that's from the NIH that oversees the CDC, right? The same NIH that got $34 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who also funds Moderna, the vaccine maker, and 99.5%, which is a total lie, of these people are causing the infections? Or is it the actual number, 99.5% of people that get coronavirus don't even have problems? But these propagandists for a failed ideology, they can't stop. But the American people are waking up. They're waking up to a narrative that has been pushed on us. We have had a metaphoric attack on our nation, on our way of life, and on our children and elderly. And the mainstream media and the pundits and the ideologues, they know that the masses don't feel pain and project pain. But I would tell you, individuals do. And individuals need to wake up. Because we're not dealing with critical race theory. We are in the middle of a critical life theory. We are in the middle of a nation that is desperately trying to be divided by a Marxist ideology. Yet we have in our DNA, it didn't have to be injected through a syringe. We have freedom. I believe that our founders had a covenant with God, because they were men of great faith. They understood the Bible. And the Bible said, from one blood, I made all nations. So we don't have to be religiously correct. We don't have to be politically correct, just kingdom correct. Because Christianity is the only religion that makes everyone equal, man and woman. It's the only religion, I would add, that doesn't oppress women. But I love Colossians 3:11, where it says, a renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and freeman, but Christ is all and in all. That's how this nation was founded. While critical race theory, while unscrupulous vaccines that aren't vaccines that are actually killing people are being pushed, and while a nation is being told it is racist and should divide, I believe the American people are awake, because it's not in their DNA to let an attack on this nation, an unscrupulous, immoral attack, be successful. Because I understand men detest the doctrine of individual responsibility. And they're reacting against the doctrine of salvation through Jesus Christ, because it fixes on the value of the individual, not the group. And the Bible reveals that losing the sense of personal responsibility is the result of sin. But sin is not a defect, it's a defiance. Because it can be in selfishness and unselfishness. And sin is not wrongdoing, it's wrong being. But I believe Americans are waking up to the wrongdoing and they're going to do the right thing. Because if you talk more about your rights than your responsibilities, you're a victim. And if you're a victim, then that gives you the right to rebel. And look at the increasing velocity of the shift in this nation to removing personal responsibility. And the characteristic of sin is to destroy the capacity that we know sin, Ephesians 2:1. But God is the way maker. He gives us a way forward. That's because we're sons and daughters. We're not victims. I mean, look at Marxism, socialism. They're against the first five of the Ten Commandments. They're absolutely against it, and that is not how this nation was founded. The Marxists say keep the rules, yet me and my brothers, whether from the military, the intelligence community, we say keep the faith because we're brothers. We're not co-workers. We don't make our title our idol. And in James 1, we understand that the one who peers into the perfect law of freedom and perseveres and is not a hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts. Remember, this is the perfect law of freedom. Such a one shall be blessed in what he does. But if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, his religion is in vain. So how do we wake up? We wake up realizing that we are sons and daughters of the Most High. And the son in the Bible means builder of the house. And it's time we wake up and rebuild our house. I mean, if you look at God as your master, then you're a slave. But I look at God as my father, which makes us a son or a daughter. Because if you're not a son, you're a slave or an orphan. And we're not dealing with global warming, we're dealing with global sinning. And as Dietrich Bonhoeffer famously said, the test of a moral society is what it does for its children. And to understand where we are, things don't go wrong. They started wrong. That's why I gave you the timeline. I'll leave you with this. Romans 1:18, unrighteousness, which is just immorality, suppresses the truth. And we have had the truth suppressed during this season of the coronavirus, the vaccine, of critical race theory. But morality or righteousness will bring light to the situation and truth. And in the United States of America, I think we need to wake up and bring the light. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I pray you have a great weekend. Hug your kids. Get involved in your community. Realize this is a generational battle that we have. But the sleeping giant is awake, and the light will burn again for freedom in this nation, for all the world to see. And most importantly, let's keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by ZBones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.